Accession number 23215, Rule 4.
In the long period of Major Woodgate, Rule 4, in that long period when you were training, before going to Normandy, had you taken part in any other invasion exercises? Or
After we became parachute battalion?
Yes, when you've been converted to parachute.
Well, one I know we did specifically geared to an invasion, but we did a lot of battalion and brigade, sort of normal training exercises. The 9th Battalion did a long march down in Cranbourne Chase. They did a big exercise up in Scotland at Ben MacDwee. That was just after I became staff captain. And I didn't go on it, but the battalion did. Climbed up Ben MacDwee. And then coming back, Martin Lindsay decided the battalion should march through London, which they duly did. I think I got a photograph somewhere. Duly did. And I was then staff captain. I got urgent messages from army or somebody. What the bloody hell is this battalion marching through London? We haven't said they can. One was always getting something like that.
I think you're saying you took part in exercise dry shod.
Yes.
What was that about?
Well, that was the invasion of practice for Moppin. It can't. Moppin. Practice for the invasion of North Africa.
What was your job on that exercise?
Oh, just umpiring. Yeah. I was an assistant umpire.
Do you remember what sort of scale that exercise was? And
oh, it was very big, yes. Yes, I suppose it involved all the troops for the invasion of North Africa.
How long was it?
Oh, it went on for about, well, I mean, it sort of took a fortnight. I was there for about a fortnight. And, you know, teeing it up, and then when it was on, it took another week or so.
Where did that take place?
Oh, up in western Scotland. Lockerbie, which you remember probably from an air accident that happened there, in Dumfriesshire.
Well, was there an airborne element in that?
No. Well, that was for 10th Essex days.
Yes.
Before we converted.
Before it became airborne.
Yeah. Mm. I think I've got the a bump of it somewhere.
When you went into the sealed camp, do you remember how you were briefed once you got into the secure?
Oh, yes. Yes. We were briefed in the marquees there. I remember James giving an excellent talk. And briefing. He always said, gentlemen, I'm sure that chaos will reign, but, you know, you'll manage somehow. And chaos did reign. Of course, a hell of a lot of people dropped in the wrong place. We had a delightful commander liaison officer who was dropping with us. He was a great naturalist and explorer. He got very friendly with James. I'll remember his name in a moment. He got killed on the drop, unfortunately. He's buried at Bavon. He was a great friend of Peter Scott. He shared a lighthouse with Peter Scott in the late 30s. That's his name. That'll come to me. Anyway, yes, I remember James giving us a very good briefing. And then, of course, all the lower formations, battalion commanders and company people, had their own briefings in the marquee, and there were models available for detailed discussion with them, with all the troops. So They really, as they say, they should have been fully briefed. But as you well know, one never is, whatever troubles taken.
What was your main list of priorities? What were the things you thought were the most important things you had to do once the operation was launched, having been briefed and looked at the bottles?
Well, to make sure that people were fed and had ammunition. We dropped with 2 24-hour ration packs. So that took us through 2 days. But then we had to find the divisional maintenance area, get the stuff, and get it round to the battalions. And we only had a captured Italian lorry initially. So Brasco and I sort of shared the chores of going to get them and take them out. And the RAF had supplied us at night. We're dropping on the main DZ where 5th Brigade had dropped. And then I used to go back and meet with the AQ, Seamus Hickey, the DAQ, Cliff Norbury, at divisional headquarters, and what had been dropped was then sort of shared out, you know, bits of mortars or Bren guns or what have you, and then one got one could, put it in what transport one had, trotted back to brigade headquarters, and then shared it out amongst the battalions.
What transport were you supposed to have according to the plan?
I don't really remember what. I think we were supposed to have 1 or 2 jeeps, which would have been come in by glider. How they would have got to us, I don't know. But initially, of course, we relied on captured German transport, one of which was this Italian lorry, which we had a very good chap driving it. And the person was with him had either a Sten or a Bren gun. I'd acquired a Bren gun, I don't know where from.
I mean, was that taken into account in the plan? Was it reckoned that you would be likely to get enemy?
Oh, I think so, yes, yes. Well, for instance, the 224 field ambulance, which was our field ambulance, their RASC transport officer had heard there was quite a lot of enemy transport nearby, and he went back and went and got it for the field ambulance, which was a great asset. And of course, the field ambulance were absolutely marvelous. Of course, they were operating, you know, all night. How they managed, I can't think. Of course, under heavy fire. Did I tell you about the brilliant idea? I think it must have. Our ADMS was a remarkable chap. He'd been in the First World War and a great one for acquiring decorations. He was a ADMS of the first Airborne Division in North Africa. Anyway, he thought in order to get people in the field ambulance, he'd get conscientious objectors to come into the field ambulance, which of course was brilliant. One got quite a lot of very good chaps into the field ambulance.
How did they get on with the other members of this?
Well, everybody got on all right, really. Well, if you're sitting in an aircraft, 20 people in an aircraft, in hazardous conditions, you jolly well got to get on all right.
What happened then when you were preparing for the immediate requirements of the operation? What did you have to do preparatory to mounting before going out to Normandy?
Well, all one's normal work under very difficult conditions. Apart from my other duties, I was PMC of the brigade mess, and I was desperately trying to get the accounts up to date. And fortunately, our chap who looked after our residues, I was very good at accounts, so he did it for me. No, the general things of getting ready. I remember well just the day before we were all going to set off, the DAQ, Alec Pope, his batman was, no, he looked at his pistol, and he said, "Oh, my dear Rayner, you might at least have caught, it was all rusty, I think. You might have cleaned my pistol for me." A very good chap is Batman, who I've seen since, I've lost touch with now.
Were there any difficulties that arose last minute when you were preparing to actually fly out?
No. Well, as far as I was concerned, it, we went round late, I went round late evening to the, we'd been round the day before to get our parachutes all ready, left them in the plane, I think, and I went round, we implaned and took off.
Did you have anything to do with the planning of implaning? Or did you have anything to do with the planning of the implaning? Was that part of your work?
Not, well, we had a list of the sticks, and of course, one's own stick. You want, you made sure that they'd all got parachutes and that sort of thing. No, that was a G thing, really. That was done by the brigade major and the intelligence officer. One just went where one was told. Oh, don't come up.
What about the flight out? What was that like?
That was all right, yeah. Of course, it took, to form up a big armada, it was quite a lot of flying before you set off and over. And then, of course, you've got the most gorgeous view of all these ships going over. As we passed the French coast, there was some flak going up from Cabourg, I think it was. None of us struck on our plane. And I was dropped in comparatively the right place.
What was your descent like? Was that okay?
That was all right. Mm. Mm.
Who was in your stick with you?
In the plane?
In your stick, yes.
My batman. Mm. But I don't really remember well who they were, because I thought I was going to be in a plane going with the rest of brigade headquarters from Dunampany, but I went from Broadwell.
Where were the rest of brigade headquarters due to land? What was their landing zone?
It was just by Varaville. Hmm. But unfortunately, they went astray. Hmm. But I happened to land with the 9th. As I say, I met Colonel Otway. But a lot of the 9th Battalion went astray, of course.
Was it pitch dark when you jumped?
Mm. I expect there was a moon. I think one could see something. I think Terence had a bit of a fight after he landed in some farm buildings. But then I met him. I never remember whether we made a password to each other or not. Whether I remembered the shape of him. It was he and his batman.
Where did that meeting take place? Was it in the open or...?
Yes. In a field, in the middle of a field. Then we helped each other over ditches. We went on to where his battalion was rendezvousing. And Major Alan Parry was flashing a lamp. He was my old company commander. So we had a quick word with him. And then I went off and to look for some of brigade headquarters.
Did you have a brigade HQ RV set up in advance? Did you have a brigade HQ rendezvous point established?
Yeah. Where it should have been, yes.
Where were you supposed to meet up?
Where?
Where were you supposed to meet up?
Oh, not very far from where the 9th were. Mm. And we all had bird noises, so when one was moving about by night, and you wanted to make the front stop, and you made two tweets on your on your thing. I went and bought these bird noises from a chap in London called Thibault Villemy on Hoban Viaduct. And when we were having a briefing of some kind, James made me go and demonstrate all these wretched bird noises to everybody. And the one we allotted to 224 Field Ambulance, which was our field ambulance, was quack quack. So that when I demonstrated that one, there was enormous applause.
What was the brigade headquarters one then?
I think it was a curlew.
A curlew?
I think so, yes. Yes, I'm sure it was. They were rather good. I've still got one somewhere.
When you were moving towards your brigade headquarters location, who was with you? Were you on your own, or were you with a party?
Well, when I left...
When you left the RV,
No, I was on my own, yeah.
You're on your own?
I took out my pistol and felt I felt terribly tired. One had been so busy up till then. Again, one had been so busy up to the time of getting into the aeroplane, one didn't think, oh dear, this is frightful. One sort of rather felt, oh, thank goodness we're off. There was so much to do. Anyway, I trotted off through the woods. But I did feel very, very tired. I had a little rest. And then I went on and eventually arrived at this lovely, tall, roofed chateau, Benny Oville Bavon. And then I met up with some more chaps there. And a field security chap was questioning the people in there. And then we went on a few, two or three more miles to the Manual Crossroads. And the Baron Chardonnay, who, the wife of the chap who owned the chateau, got friendly with her and her son. And each year when I went back there, I used to say, and whatever it was, my third, fourth, or fifth, the first one being on the night of D-Day. There she died now. Oh.
How were you doing your navigation then, going from the drop zone to your RV? Were you going on a compass?
No, I didn't, no. I wonder, quite often wonder. I just went on, hopefully, hoping that I'd meet somebody. Well, I suppose it wouldn't have been much use then. Well, I knew the sort of general direction I was supposed to go.
And could you see enough of the ground to pick out features and landmarks?
Well, it was all woodland, really, until I got to the chateau. And then there was more open, of course. And then I met some people and hoped they'd know where they were, one of which was the commander of the field ambulance, which I think he did know where we were.
So who was there when you got to the place where the headquarters should be located?
What, the final headquarters?
Yes.
Well, we went on from the chateau. We followed down a road, quite a rough road, until we got to Le Manual Crossroads. And then we must have all had a little rest round this field, just opposite that memorial we were looking at. And then I think I said, oh, we better go in and set up our headquarters. So we went in down this drive to that lovely house at the Manual Crossroads. And by, at that time, one hadn't got used to marching into people's houses and saying, we're going to use this as our headquarters. So I set up our headquarters in an outbuilding with steps outside. You've probably seen it. And downstairs we had our signals officer, signals, when the chap came in from the HQ. Upstairs we had a sort of office, and through there was a sort of a bedroom. Of course, when James Hill arrived, he'd been horribly badly wounded by bombs when he was seeing what happened at the Mayorville Battery, had managed to get back to a field ambulance in Romville itself, and then the ADMS brought him up in a jeep It always annoyed James that the ADMS on the way up thought he saw some Germans in a wood and would insist on getting out with his pistol, leaving poor old James, who wanted to get out to headquarters, waiting for him in the Jeep. Anyway, he arrived, much to my relief, because we were thinking we were going to make Alistair, you know, tell Alistair Pearson he was going to be Brigadier. And then, of course, late that afternoon, you got that wonderful view over with the Air Landing Brigade coming in by gliders. So one thought, oh, thank God, we're rescued.
Had you actually had any brushes with the enemy at this stage? Because you landed at Varaville and you'd moved up to Le Mesnil. What encounters did you have with
them? No, I hadn't.
No, you haven't seen any?
No, no.
Have you heard any?
Well, there was all firing all round, and no, I hadn't. Very lucky.
What equipment did the brigade headquarters have in it? And what was the furniture and equipment of the brigade HQ as it was set up in that outbuilding?
Well, we had wireless sets.
Yeah. So presumably you had a forward link and rear link wireless sets.
No. We were all one.
All one.
Yes.
So you were receiving from the battalions and sending to the division.
That's right, yes.
On a single set.
On a single set, yes.
That must have made the management of radio traffic rather complicated.
I would have thought so, yes. Particularly as our signals officer wasn't there at all.
Who was running the signals?
Somebody from Div HQ signals, who I knew of old when I'd been doing defence platoon commander, came along and very kindly set up our wireless set. Because our signals officer was first signals officer was captured. But then later, our second signals officer turned up and got it underway. But the signals and wireless sets were really more G's, the brigade major and IO's pigeon, and AQ only were called to it and allowed to use it if there was something absolutely vital in the AQ thing that had to be done. So the AQ side were not all that good at using the wireless. We always thought it was a G thing.
So you've got the signals equipment. What else was there in the HQ?
Well, I dropped with a satchel, which I've still got, full of forms.
The indent forms.
Well, that indent and return of, personnel return, all those sort of things. And things for doing decorations. Internal Otways DSO had a form for that. And General Bunth, yes. But as I say, it wasn't really any good indenting for anything. If you wanted something, you went and got it.
What about maps? Did you have a full set of maps?
We'd all had maps issued to us, yes. And escape apparatus, one had sort of files which you sewed into your smock, and maps of the Pyrenees, and some of which I've still got. I gave one to one of my sons-in-law the other day. Incidentally, in our downstairs loo, it's the smock that I wore when I dropped in Normandy. I used it all through the Ardennes and Holland, and I dropped over the Rhine with it. So one day I shall have to steel myself to give it to a museum. I think probably the 9th Battalion Battery. Maps, yes. Maps were fairly on a lavish scale. I don't know whether they... I would have said all platoon commanders had any maps that they wanted.
How were the maps in the headquarters used? Did you have... A map board and easel, or did you have a map table?
Map case, yes. Which I still got somewhere. You know, so. Issue one was a thing like that, with a talc over the front.
It was a canvas bag with a talc.
Well, no, the issue ones, no, were just a board with a talc over the front. Most people had, which I had also, a sort of in cloth, folded in.
Yes.
Which were very good. And you wrote on them with
Trinograph.
Yes.
What did the Brigadier do when he was briefing, though? Did he have a mat board and an easel, or did he use a table? The Brigadier, the Brigade Commander.
Yes, well, that was kept by the intelligence officer.
Yes.
That was one of his main duties. Yes, yes.
Was he at the headquarters when you arrived?
No. He turned up later, and then got killed a day or two later. And we got another one. He was killed on just before that awful 12th of June, when there was so much trouble up at Satos and Combe and Wadimont. Yes, that was the intelligence officer's main job, making sure that the brigade commander had a map up to date. Thoroughly up to date. Of course, James was always going round, despite his wound, he was always going round to the units to see what was happening and telling them what to do and that sort of thing. And as I say, on the awful 12th of June, I always remember him. Of course, the Black Watch had come up to us and were badly hammered, and Terence wired through, he didn't think he would hold out. James set off, borrowed this company from the Canadians, who were all round Le Mesnil Crossroad, set off with his pistol up to the 9th Battalion, and inspired them all to further efforts. But it was a very dicey day.
Was that the worst day?
I would say so, yes. It had all been building up to that. Because we were on the continual bombardment the whole time. Snipers sniping. Really, it was nice to have the headquarters out right up the front, but it might have been better to have them a little way back.
Do you think it would have been better to have them on the, as it were, the reverse slope?
The reverse slope or something like that, yeah.
Because then they might have been sheltered from the
enemy. But then you've got all the, they would have only bombarded us there. And to set off with one's goods, food and ammunition to the battalions, it was really better to have to set off from where we were rather than to come up and go out.
How did you deal with the business of resupply of food and ammunition? What did you have to do to keep that going?
Well, as I say, initially they dropped some supplies by night, and that was shared out from Divil HQ. We gathered it in our Italian lorry, and then the divisional maintenance area was in some quarries the other side of the river.
The other side of the Orme?
The other side of the Orme, yes.
So that was really in the 3rd Division area?
Hmm?
In the area of the 3rd Division?
Later. One had to go back there and gather what one wanted and then bring it up.
Presumably that would mean that your parties going down to the divisional area and coming back up to brigade, that you would be exposed not only to artillery and mortar fire, but you'd be at risk of ambush.
That's right.
Did you ever run into any German infiltrators on the way?
No.
Backwards or forwards?
But our Brasco one day did. But he had a member of the defence platoon with him. And they shot their way out. And I've been corresponding recently with that chap who was with Brasco. He was interested to hear. Brasco died a little. I kept in touch with him. I was his best man. And he died a year or two ago. But he had quite a battle.